Welcome into the Fan pregame Wednesday night. Two big games on the network after us. Got the Leafs on the road in Dallas with a 7:30 start. And then later on Sportsnet 1, Vancouver and Utah at 10 o'clock on Pacific and Sportsnet 1. We'll talk to a guest for each. Luke Fox in a couple minutes here to tee up the Leafs in Dallas. And then Thomas Drantz at 6:30.
Yeah, pretty easy programming for us tonight. Big Leafs story, get Luke Fox on. Big Canucks story, get Thomas Drantz on. It all works out sometimes.
The big Leafs story, which we'll have our text line open at 590-590, standard message and data rates apply. You can send us a message. You got 88, 34, and 16 on a line tonight. Rare occurrence. Is it a panic move? Is it a fact-finding mission? Why is Craig Berube mixing things up so drastically?
The old nuclear option, yeah. Very, very exciting. It's worked before for some teams. I think the Chicago Blackhawks may have patented it back in the day with Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane, but we'll see and probably go to the expert, the source on this, and maybe we can share theories afterwards on why the Maple Leafs are going with such a top-heavy lineup tonight.
Yes, send us a message at 590-590. But let's ask Luke Fox of Sportsnet.ca joining us in Dallas. What's going on, Luke? How's it going?
It's going well.
Is that your hotel room?
This is my hotel room. Yeah.
Cool art.
Downtown Dallas. Cool art. Yeah, I ordered that. I'll be here when I got here. Yeah.
Looks good.
Good to go.
All right, we'll start with the big question of the day. The nuclear option, as Justin puts it, 88, 34, and 16. What gives? Why are we seeing these through tonight against the Dallas Stars?
Well, I think it's just as simple as it worked last game. And so the coach is sticking with it. I wouldn't get too excited about this. This feels to me like a very temporary solution, loading up Austin Matthews with both William Nylander and Mitch Marner. I think it's one of those situations where there's only one puck to go around. You know, I asked Craig Berube about it this morning at the morning skate, and he was saying that his message to them was, don't get too fancy. I don't know what else you expect. I mean, these are three fancy guys. I don't know if there's a real hard forechecker among them. So this feels like it might be a short-lived experiment. It worked last game. The reason why is he wanted to free those guys up and give the heavier Tage Thompson line matchup against Buffalo to Tavares and Pacioretty and Knies, which is all of a sudden a really heavy bit of a slower second line. But that sparked the rally last game. They got the win after a slow start, so he's going to keep it rolling in to the start of this game against the Stars. The trick for me is the Buffalo Sabres are not nearly as deep as the Dallas Stars. So you front load your whole line. You're on the road. You don't control the matchups. You know, if you're the Dallas Stars and Pete DeBoer, you have one line you can kind of really try and target. So I don't know. We'll see how the experiment goes, but we got 82 of these things. It's kind of fun to see something new once in a while.
Yeah, it definitely is. And I think a lot of people have been pining for just some creativities to see some new looks. This isn't necessarily the one I think many people were clamoring for, but I am interested in the second line of Tavares, Knies, and Pacioretty, because if I'm looking at like the most, I guess, comprehensive options in order to make sure that there's something on each line, yeah, one core four member might have to go solo. And if you go Tavares, Knies, and Pacioretty, well, it does open up a world of possibilities, I think, with lines one and three, or at least a balanced top nine. Do you think there are some legs there for a potential? You mentioned it was a little more plotting, but you think Tavares, Knies, and Pacioretty could work?
Well, I think they'll work when they have the puck. This is obviously not going to be a rush line, but if they get control of the puck down in the Dallas zone, this is going to be an excellent cycle line. You know, they're really heavy. Both Pacioretty and John Tavares seem to have developed some chemistry. I think they think the game the same way. They kind of play it at the same speed. I like their chemistry. And everyone loves having a forechecker like Matthew Knies on their line, right? Because he just plays in straight lines and goes and gets it. And if he can get one of those guys the puck, they can see each other really well. So I think there's something there. I just worry about rushes going the other way, and I don't think they'll be threatening off the rush. So it's kind of a lot of the same thing on both lines as opposed to getting different elements on different lines. Really fascinated about that third line that finally broke through. There's been a lot of games where the Leafs' third line has been invisible, But Max Domi moving to center, you know, finally getting off the Schneid, scoring. Nick Robertson coming out of the press box and scoring. Bobby McMahon has looked fantastic in the couple games since he's been back at full health. That line is really intriguing to me. It's one thing to do it against a Sabres team. Let's see it how they can do it against the Dallas Stars. We're talking about the best defensive team in terms of goals against per game. Can the third line be effective? Can they carry that momentum that they generated on Sunday against Buffalo? That one's a fascinating one for me.
Yeah, I want to stick on the Robertson or the third line in general since you brought it up. I think Bobby McMahon's been kind of like the glue guy wherever he ends up going. But just the relief in Robertson and Domi getting on the score sheet, and maybe tonight being a special night for Robertson as well. Obviously, his brother on the other team, his parents. I saw your tweet about mom wearing a hat and the jersey, like they're going both teams here tonight. How big is this one for him personally, and how great would it be for him to continue what he built on, even though it was the Buffalo Sabres, but to maybe get another one tonight?
Yeah, well, what's interesting is he had four healthy scratches in a row. And, you know, you started to wonder, like, with the Leafs getting more healthy forwards coming back, David Kampf comes back for the first time tonight as well. It's like, is he even going to get to play in the Brothers Bowl? Mm-hmm. And really, he actually has the last word over Jason in these head-to-head matchups. The Leafs have won the most, and he's got had more big games, scored more points when, you know, it's kind of funny, the old brothers had the better career, but head to head, Nick actually has the edge. I was able to talk to both brothers this morning. They both, you know, we're talking about the excitement around this. Jason actually now has both parents in town. They moved to Dallas about a year and a half ago, and yeah, mom's going to be wearing the Dallas Stars sweater with the Toronto Maple Leafs cap. You know, probably very conflicted up there in the stands. But this is a big night. It's happened a few times, so some of the initial nerves are kind of gone, but it's still a meaningful one. And Nick felt very conflicted when I was talking to him. He was like, I always want good things for my brother, but I don't want them tonight. So he's like, I don't know how to feel. But yeah, it's a rare thing, right? There's only so many sets in the NHL. So, and you know, East and West teams, they only meet each other twice a year. So should be a fun one.
Yeah, Mama Robertson treating it like Eilish at a PWHL game, specifically right. Montreal versus Toronto.
Which is gotta Saturday. Represent both teams. I have the same thing
there
planned.
There you go. You're going to have both teams represented.
Just a fan of hockey.
There you go. And two teams, more specifically. In a six-team league. Anyway, I digress. Let's talk a little bit more about John Tavares. You wrote an interesting article about John this week, and it's been the season of motivators for him, right? He's got the Canada thing, which didn't work out, the captaincy thing, which obviously may be a little bit of a chip on the shoulder, the contract thing, that's still to be resolved. So a lot of things going into the season that can push John to be great this year, and he has. I guess, just what have you learned from this Tavares season so far that's stuck out the most to you? And is it right for Leaf fans to believe that the best from 91 is still to come?
Well, maybe not the best in terms of
contribution
his numbers, but yeah, but I've just been blown away by a couple things. One of the knocks on John Tavares was he's a power play merchant. Well, his even strength production this year has been off the charts. The other thing is Sheldon Keefe wasn't really trusting him defensively. For the first time in his career, he's starting more shifts in the D zone than he is in the offensive zone. And going back to what we were talking about earlier about Tage Thompson, Craig Berube, one of the reasons he made that switch is I'll give the John Tavares line the hard defensive matchup to try and free up Austin Matthews and my skill guys and let them go offensively. Sheldon Keefe was a big, kind of a more of a believer that Austin had to take the harder defensive matchups. So it's interesting that he's gaining a little bit more trust. And while being stuck in the D zone, he's actually producing more at even strength. And I think it's a testament to his work ethic, but also his belief in himself. You know, there's been a couple times where reporters floated out a question, framing it along the lines of finding the fountain of youth or turning back the clock. And he really kind of bristles at that line of that narrative line and kind of says, hey, I still believe a lot in myself. I still believe I have a lot to give. And he's showing it. He's been one of the Leafs' most consistent players. Berube's blown away. He says, this guy just works. And he does. He does all offseason. He stays after practice working on skills. And one of the things he told me, and we had like a one-on-one chat going into the season, he was like, I'm always going to work on my skating because I know that that's my weakness. And everyone says I'm not a great skater. And I know I need to work on that. But he's like, I'm going to really work on my finishing, my scoring, because what's happened to our team in the postseason? Mm-hmm. We can't even get 2-3 goals per game. That's what happened in the Bruins series. So he's like, he actually worked on one of his strengths, which is finishing, and we're seeing the results of that.
We're talking to Luke Fox, ahead of Leafs and Dallas at 7:30 start here on Sportsnet across the network. Okay, so let's talk about Anthony Stolarz because I can't believe it's been 10 minutes. We haven't brought his name up. The injury implications.
Oh, we did well there.
Yeah, we did. So it's time. Injury implications of him being 4 to 6 weeks. First of all, the honesty was nice. You know, that's a real timeline. Hopefully they stick by it. But this opportunity possibly presented for Joseph Woll, if he can run with it and stay healthy himself, to maybe solidify himself as the number one goaltender. How does this change maybe the strength of the Maple Leafs that was maybe unexpected to start the beginning of the season?
Yeah, well, Joseph Woll's been phenomenal whenever he's been in the groove and he's been available. I think this is a fantastic opportunity for him. I think he very much realizes that. I think the organization kind of pegged him to be the 1A with Stolarz as the 1B, and that's not really how it's gone the first couple months of the season. Stolarz is, you know, when he goes for surgery today, he goes as the leader across the board in save percentage. And Joseph Woll became 1B, you know, got off to the slow start with the sore groin. This is a fantastic opportunity for him to really seize the net, because a guy like Dennis Hildeby, maybe after Christmas, Matt Murray, they're going to be used second half of back-to-backs, maybe used to give Joseph Woll a rest, but he's not going to have that guy pushing him. So this is his chance to assert himself. Hey, I can carry a bit of a bigger workload. I can live up to the big contract that I signed, the $15 million extension. I have a chance to show that I can be a number one. I can own the net. And it's interesting that it starts kind of tonight, because he's never played Jake Oettinger. Those two go back to the U.S. National Development Program. Oettinger's, you know, he made Team USA. He's kind of one of the bar setters in terms of American goalies. And Woll's, I think, you know, that's a peer of Woll's, and he's always tried to measure up to Oettinger. Oettinger's gotten more of the hype. Now they're going head to head. This is a great opportunity tonight for Joseph Woll to kickstart this, you know, 4 to 6 week run as the guy in Toronto on a positive note.
We're chatting with Luke Fox ahead of the Leafs and Stars Wednesday night hockey. How much, you know, this season's been all about for the Maple Leafs is like uncovering and identifying and being the new Maple Leafs, right? Under Craig Berube. How is Craig Berube going to change this team? All that stuff. I think it's a story that still needs to be fully written and completed, but we have a lot of data to work with. We kind of know and understand who the Maple Leafs are at this point. But I wonder with Stolarz's emergence, how much he potentially shaped what the Maple Leafs became in your mind, because like any TV show, you bring in a character and all of a sudden that character is really successful. Then they build out a show based on that character, or they shape the show or the plot towards that character. How much do you think, you know, Stolarz and the emergence of dominant goaltending has shaped the way Craig Berube has wanted to shape this team?
Are you talking about the Joey spinoff from Friends? Is that what you're talking about?
Maybe not the most successful one in history, but sure.
No, I think that, you know, two people on the team always go hand in hand, right? In terms of success, and it's the goalie and the coach. So, you know, Craig Berube's really preached this defensive system, and it's kind of fed into setting up the goalies for success. You know, they do keep teams to the outside more. You know, you look at the numbers, they are blocking more shots. They are taking less risks offensively. So there's less pinching, less odd man rushes, which are, you know, people who study the numbers will tell you, like, that's one of the greatest, you know, forebears of scoring goals is rush chances against. The Leafs don't allow as much rush offense going in their goalie's face. So the two have kind of worked hand in hand, and then the goalies have repaid Berube by being fantastic. The Leafs rank number one in the East in team save percentage. It's not just Stolarz. Woll's been good. Hildeby's only had 3 games, but in one of them he was great. So, you know, they have pitched in, and it's kind of fed each other. You know, I think the players see that the goalies are coming up big, so they want to play harder in front of them. And the goalies see, like Joseph Woll's talked a lot about the guys blocking shots in front of them and how that inspires him. It's like they're selling themselves out in front of me, going out of their way to try and block shots. Well, that I want to dig in and make the next save for them. And I think the two are kind of fueling each other, the coach's system and the goalie's excellent performance so far.
I mentioned some people coming back from injury. It looks like David Kampf was added to the roster after being on LTIR. Expectations just for his fit, you know, it's been a little while since we've seen him, and with a lot of questions about how they're going to make this roster better come the trade deadline. What does he need to prove when he gets back on the ice that he's part of this core?
He just needs to do his David Kampf thing, right? Like he's going to be, he's not over. I don't like him as a third line center. That's not what he's going to be. He's going to be fourth line center. He's going to be put in defensive situations. He's going to be on the penalty, number one penalty killing unit, probably. That's all he has to do is worry about keeping pucks out of the net. You know, I think we all know at this point, any offense from David Kampf is looked at as a bonus. And to me, this is more of, you know, the Fraser Minton, you know, preview coming to an end. And he started off really strong, kind of faded a little bit, and that's okay, right? This kid is still 20 years old. I think Leafs Nation got pretty excited just because he's the new toy. He's the mystery box. Let's see what this guy looks like. And he had such a great start, potted a couple goals. He looked fantastic. He plays really smart. But, you know, I think, you know, the wear and tear caught up to him a little bit, and that's fine. I think it's good for him to be down developing with the Marlies, getting more ice time. You know, he gets healthy scratched last game. It's like you don't want him playing 9 or 10 minutes. You'd rather him be, you know, taking on a full workload and being a top six center down on the farm so that when they do need him, he's ready to go. Kampf, you just want to see if his body holds up after a month off and, you know, just does the safe, smart thing.
Luke, what do you make of Morgan Rielly's season? The offensive numbers are obviously down, I think, a half point or more than a half point per 60 compared to last season. But when people make or point that out, I think people fail to also point out that, yeah, the numbers are down across the board for the Maple Leafs in terms of scoring, and some of them are going to be on that same bell curve. Now, that's not the case for the other elite players offensively for the Maple Leafs. I guess Austin Matthews not really included in that, but Mitch Marner's having, you know, a season that could be considered career. Morgan Rielly is supposed to help pucks go in the net offensively. Are you seeing something that's either different or problematic in his game?
Yeah, I don't know if it's problematic. I think what's different is, you know, as one of the leaders on the team, he kind of goes out of his way to be an example. So I think if you're Morgan Rielly, you're like, okay, the new coach wants to play completely different from the other coach. You know, he doesn't want a possession game. He wants more of a dump and chase game. He wants a safer game. And I'm an offensive rush defenseman. That's my strongest suit. But in order to help set the right tone for the new coach and for the guys, I'm going to try and play his way. So, you know, I asked Craig Berube recently about Morgan Rielly, and he said, I talked to him right from the beginning about, I want you to play great defense. And, you know, you kind of have to sacrifice one thing if you want the other. And I think it's still a learning process. I don't think Morgan Rielly or Berube have quite found the balance quite yet in terms of doing what's best for Morgan, in terms of getting the best out of his natural skill set, which is his skating, which is his playmaking, you know, being that fourth man up in the rush and being the trailer and trying to create some offense. They do need more goals from their defensemen. They need more goals from everybody. But I think Morgan is like, step one, I want to, you know, follow the coach's lead and play strong defense. The one thing is, whoever's with Chris Tanev makes his partner better. And I thought Morgan actually played better when he was with Tanev, but now they've stumbled upon this shutdown pair of McCabe and Tanev, and the fit between Ekman-Larsson and Rielly isn't quite there. I think it's still a work in progress. And I wonder if they are able to find a secondary trade option. I think first and foremost, they want a forward. But if they are able to find a secondary guy, you wonder if they try to find another righty to pair with Rielly. Like, his best hockey was when he was with, like, a guy like Luke Shen.
Oh, when you say Luke Shen in this market, everyone...
Bring him back. Bring him back.
Him and Ryan O'Rielly. What about a package? Just
not so fun there in Nashville, in hindsight.
You think that's a possibility?
I think it's a possibility in the fact that, you know, the Leafs, I think, are going to and should think big. Think a little bit bigger than they did last time around. I don't think they should be poking around for the Ilya Lyubushkins of the world. I think this is a the way they're playing, I think they should take a bigger swing in the trade market than they did last year.
All right. We have a couple more weeks before we...
No offense to Lyubushkin.
Well, you know.
He's a fine player. But I'm just saying, spend a little more. Yeah.
All right. Luke, I'll let you go. It looks like you're wearing a Dallas Stars tie, though, tonight. I don't know if you brought a blue and white one. A little Dallas-y.
A Leafs hat and a Stars sweater.
There you go. Just like the Robertson clan. Yeah. Thanks so much, Luke. We'll see you this weekend. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks,
That's
guys.
Luke Fox of sportsnet.ca, head of Leafs and Stars.
It's a good eye picking out that green on the tie.
That was a Dallas Stars tie.
Was it?
Yeah, pretty close.
You know those like goofy jerseys with like the, looks like a horoscope on the chest? Brutal jerseys.
Okay.
But those are the only ones that fit because there's gold in that
one.
Oh,
I see.
Stars saying. Don't have any gold. So
yeah, well, they got like kind of like a yellowy color. Maybe that was more Minnesota yellowy. Wild.
Yeah.
That was Minnesota Wild.
I think more Vegas Golden Knights.
No, fine.
You bring up the jersey during the break and,
all right.
And you'll be like, yeah, Dallas Stars.
We got Dallas Stars and Maple Leafs on the network at 7:30 after us with the pregame show there. We opened up our text line, 59590. We mentioned it with Luke to start the show there. The nuclear option, 16, 34, and 88, the big three on a line tonight. It didn't seem like Luke was too convinced that this was going to stick too long, understandably so, but it is an option that they're going to start tonight with. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I do think it's more, it's not about Nylander and Marner as much as it is pretty much everyone else, mm. It feels like. Yeah, you kind of want to get Matthews going, I guess. Like, it's been a weird season, and if you put a lot of talent around him, maybe they have a great night and things can snowball from there. But the second line, I think, is worth exploring with Nyes and Pacioretty and Tavares. Can that trio work? Is there a combination there that can be meaningful down the road? And then there's obviously the third line played really, really well, and they weren't playing well. They were mired in individual and collective struggles, that being Nick Robertson and Max Domi specifically, and they had a great night. So why not go back to the well and let's see if they can do it again? So it feels like it's almost, you want to explore everything but the superstar trio, which puts the superstar trio together, at least for tonight.
Yeah, and he mentioned it, like, this is a much different team than the Buffalo Sabres. This is a very defensively stingy team tonight, and they're going to get the problem with this is they're doing this on the road, so they're not going to get the best opportunity to match up because the Dallas Stars will be able to play home ice advantage in a sense. So I think it'll be a hard game for those three just in terms of who they're going to be up against. But that opens up second line. Maybe it opens up third line.
Which is okay. I think you get a good understanding instead of like, hey, you're in the most favorable conditions at all times.
No,
or
I think
most
that's
times.
What you need to learn.
You throw it against competition that wouldn't be necessarily ideal.
Mm-hmm. And we say, like, what's the point of the regular season? Like, get to the playoffs. Well, maybe opportunities like this where you are learning about a tougher opponent. The Stars, a lot of people pick them to be someone that comes out of the West. So how can your team find secondary scoring, third line scoring when maybe the three aren't able to get three or four goals tonight? We'll see how that works. Looking forward to seeing the Robertson Bowl, though.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know, like, I like that kind of stuff.
You do?
Yeah.
I'm sure that will be touched upon in Best Bets later.
Unfortunately, Best Bets were horrendous last night.
They were pretty bad, and we'll get to the NBA Cup
in
a little bit.
We apologize.
It's interesting, though. Like, the Maple Leafs are, switch subjects as fast as possible, Maple Leafs are healthy. Like, they're not really missing much right now, other than Anthony Stolarz, I guess, that, like,
is
it kind of evens,
still a Leaf?
evens itself out. I don't know if we'll ever see Kelly Yarncroke, mm-hmm. but this is, like, pretty much the full complement of forwards now with David Kampf coming back, and you can start to make some real decisions, some hard decisions. The competition aspect should ramp up a bit here. I'd like to see things explored, not just, hey, this top-heavy lineup and the superstar line. Let's see if there's other combinations that can play.
Yeah, Leafs back in action tonight, as we mentioned, and then a double, a home and away against the Sabres again on Friday night. Another Friday night game. It's kind of strange. And then Saturday night against the Islanders, and then wrapping up before the break there against Winnipeg Jets on Monday. So there's four games over the next small period of time. So everyone's going to get a little bit of an opportunity to leave it all out there before the holiday freeze. Let's take a quick break, though. We'll come back. We'll talk about your NBA Cup, which you'll have to wait 300-something days for, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah.
It's devastating for Justin. Maybe what we learned from what happened last night. And then Thomas Drance is going to join us from the Athletic and Sports at 6:50. Of course, we've got the other big game on the network is Vancouver in Utah for a 10 p.m. start on Sportsnet 1 and Sportsnet Pacific. I think Vancouver's a very loud team now. Lots going on in Vancouver. So we'll try to go through as much as we can, and then we'll give you good best bets tonight.
No problem.
We'll try our best. This last night was tough. We'll be Right back on the Fan Pregame.
Hey, it's Blake Murphy.
And I'm Matt Bonner.
Join us weekday mornings at 11 as we break down all things Toronto Raptors.
It's the Raptor Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on the Fan Pregame, Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan for the next 30 minutes after us. It's the Leafs on the road in Dallas, 7 o'clock pregame up on Sportsnet. Sportsnet 1 will have Vancouver in Utah at 10 o'clock and Sportsnet Pacific as well. We're going to get into that with Thomas Drance of The Athletic and Sportsnet 650 in about 5 minutes. But before we get to the NBA Cup, I know you're itching. We have been talking about this 50-50 fortune with Sportsnet 590 The Fan for a couple of weeks now.
Mm-hmm.
And little did we know that we were going to have $1 million of a prize.
Just a small idea becomes $1 million giveaway.
Unbelievable. So our 50-50 fortune supporting Food for Kids is in its final 24 hours, 14 and a half hours left to get involved in this. So tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. will be the draw. We've created this 50-50 lottery where the more money that we raise, the more kids we can feed in the GTA and the more that you can win. The current take-home prize is over $1 million, $1,043,805, and continuing to go up. So let's see how high we can get it by tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. will be the draw. For more details and for your last chance to buy your tickets, go to foodforkids5050.ca or text the word cash to 590-590. We'll send the link right to your phone. It's our 50-50 fortune supporting Food for Kids. Standard message and data rates apply. Ontario only. This is it. 14 and a half hours. So get in there.
It's the little giveaway that could.
It's unbelievable. Like when I think it was at 400,000 and I was like, let's get it to a million. And it's a million. I'm really proud of everybody.
Are you taking
No, I'm just like I kind of, you know, we all manifested. That's what I'm saying.
I think you had a positive influence on the
I hope so. I hope that every time I read it, you know, a couple of people thought, I want to win this, and then they help Food for Kids.
Money's pouring in.
I hope they could go back and look at when the most amount of people text in cash to 590-590.
They might. I'm sure analytics could probably figure that out.
Anyway, congrats to everybody. Best of luck tomorrow at 9 a.m. Get involved. With $1 million, what would you have done differently at the NBA Cup? Would you have tried harder if you're OKC?
I mean, put things into context. What, two players on the Bucks mm-hmm. amount to $1 million just for sitting on the bench last night? All that said, I love the NBA Cup. And I don't know how you can't feel better about the NBA Cup after last night. Like, what happens if the Milwaukee Bucks and Oklahoma City Thunder met in a regular season game in mid-December?
Okay.
Would you have even the slightest take, idea, spin, anything to glean from it if the Milwaukee Bucks got a 20-point victory over OKC in December in Milwaukee at Pfizer, whatever arena that is?
I mean, I probably would have just said, okay, well, Milwaukee's figuring it out.
Because... No. You wouldn't even noticed it. Well, you wouldn't have even noticed
if I had to talk about it on the show, it might take.
But we wouldn't have
that.
Talked about it on the show.
Well, then
it would
glad
have been something
we spent
that
enough time for you.
It would just like, oh well, you know.
Okay,
Thunder
so
great.
What did we learn?
They moved to 20-6.
Tell me why this was important.
We learned that it might be too much, too fast in terms of anointing the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Oh, you're down on your OKC Thunder.
I'm slightly worried about what I saw because this was
your
a big
Shea.
Game. You clearly saw a player of Giannis Antetokounmpo's status poke some holes in what the Thunder are doing. He was unstoppable mm-hmm. in that game. And now it's something you can apply to future games that are going to be played in high leverage situations against the Oklahoma City Thunder. They do have Chet Holmgren coming back, but was Chet going to stop this man last night? I don't think so. So that's an issue there. However, I do think Milwaukee might just be like the perfect sort of kryptonite for a team like OKC, given that they could shoot from, you know, they got good shooters on the outside and a force who can just drive through the middle of their defense. However, I think the more important thing is that Milwaukee might have something here. And Damian Lillard was talking about, it took me and Giannis a while to, you know, figure out how it was going to work between us. The point is, it doesn't work between them. They just play isolation games. Giannis does his thing. Dame does his thing. They got a bunch of shooters around them. And it works if Giannis is in a mode like he was last night. So I feel a little less certain about OKC's positioning in the hierarchy of the NBA after last night. And after the 2-8 start or whatever it was from the Milwaukee Bucks, I feel like there actually is something there. They could be a challenger to the Boston Celtics in the Eastern Conference playoff race. I think we learned that the Bucks could be the real deal. Can he do that 16 times in the space of 2 months? I'm not really sure, because I think it was asking a lot and it was like a top of the performance range type of deal for Milwaukee. But clearly the Milwaukee Bucks are real, and maybe Oklahoma City has to do something about a couple deficiencies. One being they don't really have a 3-point shooter, a great one, and they can't stop a guy like Giannis right now. And there's only one Giannis, thankfully for them.
I actually thought that the fact that after the game they decided not to pop any bottles, not to have any celebration, I kind of sent it to you jokingly, like, oh, that's soft. But I thought, you know what? Like, this is it's I'm torn, because as fans and as media, we're talking about the importance of this. But it kind of said to me, like, take us seriously. We're taking ourselves seriously. Don't look past us in this race, mm-hmm. because they saw how the Lakers season went. You know, they celebrated. They had the party of their lives after winning the in-season cup last year, raised a banner, and they've, I think, since removed the banner because in the end, it doesn't count as much as a championship would be. But I kind of wanted to see. I'm torn on how I feel about that one.
I think, like, it's a bit of a hard-o move to not, like, have a single beer, just leave it completely empty. A bit of a hard-o move.
But if they go on and do something great now, this moment is, like, a legendary thing.
Yeah, we'll be talking about how the NBA Cup to change the Milwaukee Bucks this year if they go on and do great things this season, for sure. And if that's not meaningful, then I don't really know what is in December, at least in the NBA.
Only 300-something days till your next NBA Cup discussion. All right, let's bring in Thomas Drance of The Athletic and Sportsnet 650. Help us tee up tonight's game. We got Vancouver on the road to play Utah.
I know Drance likes the NBA Cup.
Do you, Drance?
I know he does.
Absolutely. I love the mini seriesization of professional sports. It's something special in the middle of, 82 games gets long, right? It's something of a grind. I think that's a disadvantage that the NBA and the NHL, for example, have when compared with English soccer or the NFL, right? Every game matters so much more. You know what you never get? You never get an NFL game where afterwards we're like, yeah, but they didn't have their legs. Mm-hmm. You know, like they looked like they were only at 70%. They couldn't win with their B game. Like, you never say that about an NFL game. You know, maybe sometimes with a short week, you factor in the rest disadvantage. But like the NHL and the NBA, you're managing like a hamster wheel, right? You're managing load. You're managing energy levels. Sometimes the best teams are the teams that are like more motivated for 20 extra games than their opponents. Whereas with sort of limits on how many games you play, you know, you can expect every team's best every time out. I think just adding something a little bit different, a little bit special, sort of to the proceedings, extra stakes, extra cause to celebrate. I like all of that. I also like that there's an additional team that can say at the end of the year that they won something, as opposed to that there's one winner and 31 teams that are disappointed, you know, except maybe the lottery winner, right? Like, I like that there's more avenues to celebrate teams. I like just having something that changes things up. And yeah, I think it breaks the drudgeries. So I'm a big fan. I would love to see the NHL come up with something itself, to be honest.
A very fair take. Okay, maybe that would help get some consistency with Vancouver Canucks, because we're trying to you know, distill all of our thoughts on Vancouver Canucks into a 15-minute chat with you, and a lot of it is just inconsistency, and it's highs and lows, and it's brutal showings, and then responses, and players in and out of the lineup. Like, what's going on in Vancouver? How do you start to identify what their identity is over the stretch?
Yeah, I don't know. And usually 30 games into a season, for me, you know, a guy who looks at a lot of data and tries to approach covering a team as analytically as possible, 30 games usually is a pretty important mark for me, right? It's a moment where every team in the league's played usually about 1,200 five-on-five minutes. We usually have a sense of confidence about what a team's true talent level is. And when it comes to the Canucks, I have no idea, right? Like, I have no idea. We saw sort of 16 games from them before JT Miller left the lineup. Demko's only played, he's making his third straight start tonight, or looks to be, based on Dan Murphy, Sportsnet's Dan Murphy's reporting from Utah. But he's only played 4 games. They're going to be without Filip Hronek for another month. And, you know, like, this last week is the perfect distillation of the Jekyll and Hyde act that the Canucks are treating us to, right? They came out and got walked repeatedly by the St. Louis Blues in Thatcher Demko's return, gave up scoring chances the way, parents give out Halloween candy on the 31st of October. Like, it was freebies for the St. Louis Blues just 8 days ago at Rogers Arena. the next game out, they're playing the Florida Panthers, the defending Stanley Cup champion. They suffocated them. I mean, it was a shutout performance for Kevin Lankinen. The Canucks were brilliant defensively. They gave the Florida Panthers absolutely no space, no quarter, handled their stress game perfectly. And then they came out against the offensively inept Boston Bruins. And just like the St. Louis game, I mean, breakaways aplenty, tons of high quality chances. And then they play the high octane Avalanche on Monday. And once again, they're like perfect. And what's so baffling about this, guys, is every game, it feels like within the first five, six shifts, not even 5 minutes, five, six shifts, you can kind of tell which Canucks team has shown up. Rick Tocchet's had some terse availabilities over the last 2 weeks, and you can totally understand why, right? Like, he must be like the rest of us, just sort of wondering game to game which Canucks team we're going to see. And so in trying to figure out what team this is, like, I know that they have a really high level defensive fastball, and yet I don't see it every game. And I kind of think it comes down to work rate. And so how do I evaluate what this team really is at this point? I think it's very difficult. We're going to have to see more. We're going to have to see what they look like when they get fully healthy. But, I mean, it's been a baffling season. And I think that's sort of the underlying theme, like just general bafflement about what exactly this team is, what their ceiling is, and honestly, what their floor is too, because on a game-to-game basis, it seems like even that can fall through.
Yeah, when it depends on work rate, and it is an 82-game season and not an NBA or NHL Cup, like, you're going to have the ups and downs, but when it's so Jekyll and Hyde, as you mentioned, it's got to be immensely frustrating, and the frustration did come up for Tocchet on the weekend after that Bruins loss. He's saying, you know, four or five guys struggling to get emotionally invested in the game. I wonder for you and for Canucks fans how coded or obvious it is who those guys are. And I'm not asking you to name names or whatever, but I'm sure people have thought about it. Do you know exactly who he's talking about based on it? Or is this something that can change? Like, how much was this outright calling people out? Or is there some mystery or intrigue there?
I don't think there's a lot of mystery and intrigue, but I also think that's because this market is waiting for any opportunity to read between the lines and criticize Elias Pettersson. So it all just sort of dovetails with that. And then, you know, there's Miller's absence and sort of that context, and like an ongoing Miller versus Pettersson culture war that has impacted what's often the sort of most unhinged of the hockey markets that we have in the NHL, which is, of course, this city, Vancouver. It's a beautiful town, loves its hockey team, loves to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think we have a sense of it, but I also think we have a sense that it's more than four or five guys, to be totally honest with you. I think we should know because we're watching this team play, and we know what it looks like when this team plays defense the way that they can, in particular, right? That's kind of the identity. This is a Rick Tocchet team. Like, they're a lockdown defensive team as sort of the first line item on what made them special last year and what gave them a pretty high floor last year and kind of what we're not seeing this year. And when you look at the rate at which they're giving up shots and scoring chances and inner slot shots, I mean, it's the defensive drop-off that's so puzzling, because this team went from, you know, a disorganized bleep show when Tocchet first took over to being this hyper-disciplined group last year, an elite defensive team by the end of the season, improved over the course of the year. And this year, I'd say they're about average. And yet they're about average in this very peculiar way where on any given night, they can be fantastic, great, outwork their opponents, right? Like Colorado, as that game went on, and this is, you know, we're talking Rantanen, MacKinnon, Makar, right? We're talking the best of the best. And as that game went on, it looked like they weren't willing on that evening to pay the price to score and win enough battles against the Canucks. I mean, that's an impressive defensive effort. We're not talking about like they played a solid game in mid-December. We're talking about the Canucks absolutely shut down and outwilled the highest octane offensive team in hockey, or one of them anyway. And so to have that in your bag, and then for us to, you know, we don't have to see it every night, but to also have this level where the St. Louis Blues are just cutting through you like, you know, melted butter. How do you make sense of that? Honestly, how do you make sense of that? So I think we're just sort of waiting to see whether or not the real Canucks will stand up here at some point. They've got 52 games to get it together. I think we all expect them to make the playoffs. I think they're a team that maybe even has some, you know, sleeping giant in the Western Conference potential. And yet, you know, tonight against this unnamed Utah hockey club that looks pretty pesky, right? That absolutely has all the hallmarks of one of those young teams with a stellar 5-on-5 profile that could be a lot more imposing over the latter 50 games than they were in the first 30, right? Like one of those teams that we look back on and think, hey, you know, that's a team that's really coming as a playoff caliber side in the West. You know, like this game also matters if this club's going to have the sort of margin where down the stretch you're not playing and sweating out, you know, a playoff spot. So it's going to be fascinating to see tonight. It's going to be fascinating to see down the stretch. But I think we're just sort of waiting for this Canucks team to tell us who they actually are, as opposed to making us guess, not just on a global basis, but on a night-to-night basis.
We're talking to Canucks with Thomas Drantz. When you gaze into your crystal ball, Drantz, how does the Miller-Pedersen culture war end?
Well, sorry, and to be clear, that's a culture war imposed by the fans, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's something that the fans are constantly arguing over. How does it end in real terms? I mean, first of all, I'm not trying to start up the whole debate anyway, right? They've addressed that there have been, you know, some touch and go moments in their relationship in the past. I don't know what the state of it is today. And so I'm not trying to relitigate it. In terms of how it ends or how it gets patched up, I mean, you know, I don't think you need to be best friends in a hockey environment to win games. And we've seen that from this group already. You know, we've seen that they can sustain competing with and for one another, you know, in meaningful games in the past. So, you know, I don't know that it's a real concern. I don't think we'd be talking about it if it wasn't for the fact that this team's work ethic seems to ebb and flow, right? Like if this team gets to a point where management anyway believes that part of their issue in terms of sustaining that competitiveness is personality based. Well, we've seen Jim Rutherford deal with issues like this in the past, right? We saw the James Neal for Patrick Hornqvist trade, what, that 2014, right? And everyone was so confused by it because James Neal was a point per game player and Hornqvist was a 50 point guy, but it seemed to matter a lot as the Penguins sort of elevated and won back-to-back Stanley Cup. So, you know, I think we've seen how this gets dealt with by this management team in different contexts. But, you know, in terms of how it ends here, who knows? Who even knows if it's really an issue? It seems to, there's a lot of noise externally. There's obviously some reason for it, given this team's mystifying track record recently. But, you know, I'm not trying to start it all up again necessarily. I don't have a really good feel for whether or not it's even the issue that fans seem to think it is and that media seem to be intent on talking about on a day-to-day basis.
Mm-hmm. We got time for one more for you here, Drantz. Lots of conversation, obviously, as we approach like the roster freeze over the next couple of days about a trade possibly either happening now or happening after, seeing a lot of potential ones. Even our own Elliot Freeman threw one out into the waves the other day. Like, what's a real feasible area for them to be focused on that would actually help ail what's broken maybe with this team if you were to put together something on their wish list?
Yeah, and I think there's a couple of pieces. There's sort of the headline item, which is upgrading the defense. Mm-hmm. And there's no secret that this team is intent on doing that between now and the trade deadline, ideally sooner rather than later. I think the Filip Hronek absence sort of looms large here. We've seen this team under this management group make trades to address their defense or upgrade their defense with a looming absence to contend with. Last season, they dealt for Nikita Zadorov with Carson Soucy ruled out for 3 to 4 weeks, you know, protect their hot start by bolstering their back end. So, you know, it wouldn't be out of character for them to swing hard and swing quickly to add some reinforcements on the back end with Hronek out of the lineup, for at least another month. You know, I think they want term. I really do. I think there's a sense internally that they're caught in between in terms of the state of their back end. They're pretty excited about some of their prospects, guys like Tom Volander and Sawyer Mineo, who will both be competing at the World Junior Championships in Ottawa over the next couple of weeks. Some of the guys in the American League too. So I think they're comfortable with their options going forward, but recognize that in the short term, you know, that they might need to bolster their back end. And yet, you know, this is a team that traded a first, a second, a third, and a bunch of prospects to get guys like Zadorov and Elias Lindholm, who ended up walking after the season. And, you know, I don't sense that there's a huge appetite to pay retail price for, you know, your sort of mid-tier 3-4 guy who's going to walk at the end of the season or be prohibitively expensive to retain. I think if they swing hard for a defender, they're going to be looking for a guy with some term, some control. Wouldn't be shocked to see them look for a scoring winger as well. They considered making a big deal for a scoring winger, ideally a right-handed one to help on the power play during the summer. Ended up signing Daniel Sprong and keeping their powder dry, but Sprong has been sent down the I-5 to Seattle for weeks now. So adding some additional scoring heft in you know, the form of a winger, ideally a right-handed one, I think would be a subheader. And then look, this Canucks team still doesn't have a right-handed centerman who can win draws. And you know how NHL coaches are. Like I guarantee you that that's keeping Rick Tocchet up at night as he considers playoff game plans and so on and so forth. So at some point, you know, I'd expect them to add a righty who can win some draws. Just to add some options for the coaching staff. So those would be sort of the three items that I'm watching for. But number one with a bullet, right? Like bold typeface on the marquee. I think this team wants to add a top four caliber defenseman, ideally one with some sort of puck moving dynamism to help them get out of their own end and get their attack going from the back end out.
All right. So a couple things on the wish list, but one in bold. We appreciate the extra emphasis on that one. All right, Drance, we'll let you go. Enjoy the game tonight. We'll chat with you probably after the holiday, so enjoy it. And best of luck to the general bafflement that you've been feeling around the Canucks.
Thank you kindly. Happy holidays and Merry Christmas to you guys and all your listeners.
Thanks so much. Thomas Drance at The Athletic and Sportsnet. 650. I wrote down general bafflement. I like that.
That is really good. He's a wordsmith. Yeah. That Thomas Drance. I think the Canucks, so we talk about the Leafs winning the division be a huge thing for them, right? Get an easier draw. I think for Vancouver, it's just get in, right? Because, you know, you could do the hunter versus hunted thing. They kind of turned themselves last year in the playoffs into the hunter or hunted or whatever one I'm going with here, because they just decided to have a rock fight. They were the number one seed in the Pacific Division, and they're like, you know what? What we do best, rock fight, Nashville Predators, let's have like 25 total shots in the game and let's win 2-1. They choose that route despite being the number one seed and be like, no, let's open it up and let's dominate. That's what they want to do. So I think they're going to be a tough out for anyone, whether a top seed in the 2 or 3, whether they're a wild card, they get in and they can make things a rock fight. So I don't necessarily think it's like imperative that they climb in the division, get the easier draw. I think they're going to be a problem and it's going to look very similar despite whatever seating they get.
All right. We'll see. You want to go sneak your way in there if you're Kiefer Sherwood and get a couple hat tricks here and there. So fall off the hunted. I think he is the hunted now. Let's do some best before we wrap up. We're going to be better this time. Okay. I'll go first.
Stop making promises when you got a 22-1 that you're.
I got a 22-1. It is the Robertson Bowl tonight. You got the Leafs and the Stars up next on Sportsnet. 7:30 puck drop, but they're going to take the pregame next. Come on, want to see two brothers score in the same night? I do. 22-1 to have both Nick and Jason score. I'm going to go more confident in actual Nick Robertson because he scored last game, but he's had the upper edge on his brother in these matches. So if you're going to pick one, maybe it's Nick. But you know, he just got one goal the other day.
So you get some family reacts twice for each.
Sportsnet would love that for the broadcast.
Exactly.
This is a pick for Sportsnet's camera crew.
Interesting that, you know, the Robertson family moves to Dallas.
I thought so too.
Jason. It might be that, you know, he's got the big contract.
And probably cheaper and live in Dallas than Toronto.
Security there, and we don't know what's going to happen to Nick Robertson. It was a trade request in the summer.
Yeah, that's true.
All that stuff.
All right, what's your best bet?
Maybe that made it a little easier for them. Ours are somewhat correlated.
Okay.
But just I'm chasing minus money just to try and be better than we were yesterday. I think not that the Leafs need a controversy. It was a little controversial when Austin Matthews went to Germany.
Stolars has a pebble in his knee. What else do you
want? Yeah, there's some controversy. But I feel like a goaltending controversy could be brewing, or at least the discussion. Right? No controversy, just like I think, you know, oh, it's Joseph Woll. We're all good. Maybe we don't feel like that tomorrow. I just got the over. I think there's going to be some goals there. If both Robertson score, it's going to be closer to the over. I just don't think it's going to be like, oh, we're good. I think there's going to be some worry with the Stolar's absence, and I will seek that out in the form of an over tonight.
I got to say, we've never gotten so many texts today about your jacket you're wearing.
Really?
It is everybody's favorite that you've ever worn. Can you divulge the company?
No free ads.
Well, maybe the company wants to work with you. Can you buy it in this country? Is it Canadian?
I don't know. It was old. I dug it out of the closet.
I'm sorry to everybody that texted. I've been asked to ask you.
Really?
It's
Oh, well, maybe we can do like a response for
that. We'll text you back. Where Justin's
shopping.
Don't want
to stay on the air, you know?
Yeah, it's a good jacket.
Thank you.
All right. Well, that's it for us tonight.
Appreciate it, guys.
You got Leafs and Stars up next.
I won't throw it out.
We'll see you tomorrow.
Maybe I'll donate it.
Oh, no, keep that.